The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
A very good morning to you, Anthony.
Boker Tov, Chad. Well, the Maccabi Games came to finale last night. The 21st Maccabi Games has finally come to a close. There was a massive event in Rishon LeZion last night, Rishon's live park. And first of all, congratulations to all of the athletes from all over the world who've come to Israel to participate, to all the administrators, to the parents, to the supporters, to the families of those who've been involved. It's really been fantastic to see how much support. And of course, to those listeners who've been following the events of the South African team and how well they've done this year at the Maccabi Games, it's really pleasing to have received all the support, not only for the teams, but of course, as a citizen of Israel, where the Maccabi Games have been taking place, it's been lovely to see all the support. Just a reminder, 10,000 athletes came from something like 60 countries, all coming together. I know Howard was a little bit cynical about the concept of a Jewish sports event and exactly what sports achievements might well come through in such an event, but there were some amazing sports achievements. And it's just a gathering of Jews from around the world, all of whom have not only the idea of sport in common, but also the idea of being Jewish in common. And we saw that yesterday at Rishon LeZion, where around the edges of the major event, the key event, of which was the closing ceremony of the Maccabi Games, the athletes and the supporters were all coming together to exchange items of clothing with each other and to try to swap things so that they could take home examples of sports clothes, team uniforms, whatever that were worn by other countries, just to bring home not only their own clothing, but also just some bits and pieces from other people, from other teams around the world. There was a lot of that going on last night around the event, and just a real coming together of so many different people from around the world, so many Jews from around the world, and of course the supporters around the edges. Interesting that this year the Maccabi Games had a number of new events that had never been competed for before. First of all, weightlifting was one of those events that had for some reason gone out of fashion, wasn't including in some of the games, and it returned back again. But also this year there was climbing, there was surfing, there was paddle that had never been competed for before. There was women's ice hockey, which I think was for the first time. So a number of different and new events that have been included, which were not there before. And I think overall a very, very successful event. So those listeners who were involved in helping athletes, helping family members, and supporting from a distance, congratulations, well done. Thank you for your support. These are all very, very important events, and it's just lovely to see how this has all come together.
Sounds incredible. Wish I could have been there. Hopefully I will get to attend the games one day in the not-too-distant future. Let's move on.
Well, you have 4 years to plan now.
Four years to plan. I've got and you know what? Now that I'm into the whole planning thing and I'm understanding that time is limited and we have to make decisions for the future, one of those is to visit Israel. So moving on to some important news, and we were chatting about this last week, strangely enough, the gas fields in the Mediterranean and how valuable they are becoming. The leader of Hezbollah has obviously jumped onto the bandwagon now and once again threatened the Israeli gas fields in the Mediterranean. What was the nature of the threat?
So, of course, yes. And I mean, the gas fields are, of course, a very, very easy target. And it, of course, also surrounds the dispute that Israel is having with Lebanon on the maritime border. And the dispute, of course, surrounds the gas fields to a greater or much greater rather than lesser extent, because the maritime border dispute has been something which has been around as long as Israel has been around. I mean, that maritime border has never really been buttoned down, has never really been secure anyway. But now it becomes an issue because we are actually extracting economic substance and economic activity along that maritime border. And of course, it's become a big issue. So it was Hassan Nasrallah, who is the leader of Hezbollah, who was on Lebanese TV last night in an interview, once again threatening Israel, as is his general way of doing business. And he said that he's not only threatening the Karish gas rig, which we already know has had Hezbollah drones circling around it, but he said all of Israel's gas fields in the waters of the Mediterranean are under threat. And then he went on to say that there is no Israeli target at sea or on land that Hezbollah's precision missiles cannot reach. Now, it's interesting that on the one hand, he went out of his way to emphasize the fact that Hezbollah had not become directly involved in the discussions on the maritime border, even though we know behind the scenes that they've been very much influential and trying to push their view onto the Lebanese government. But officially, at least on the face of things, they haven't become involved in the maritime dispute. On the other hand, Sheikh Nasrallah has actually come out threatening that Hezbollah will go to war. We will go to war, he said. The decision to go to war is in Israel's hands. And it's all about Lebanon getting what it wants and needs out of the maritime discussion. So on the one hand, Hezbollah is not getting involved. On the other hand, threatening war with Israel later this year if the issue of the maritime border is not resolved. Now, we know that the Karish gas field is due to begin producing gas already within the next few weeks, perhaps another 6 to 8 weeks, something like that. And so this is going to be a very, very crucial period during which time some sort of an agreement needs to be reached in order to try somehow to reduce this threat that Nasrallah is coming out with, that Hezbollah seems to be ready to attack Israel and create a war simply over the maritime dispute. We understand that the US mediator is due to return again for another round of talks on the maritime border. We understand that Israel has been sticking in terms of not wishing to accept what has been put forward. And of course, Israel has the upper hand at the moment because the gas rig for the Karish gas field is already on site and is already drilling into that gas field. And as I said earlier, is due to be extracting gas within the next few weeks. So there are going to be some tense moments over the next few weeks while we try to resolve this issue of the maritime border. Hopefully we can come to some sort of a decision because, as I've said so many times, it's not only to Israel's advantage. Ironically, it is also to Lebanon's advantage because they're going to be receiving some of the gas from there. So, you know, let's see how this all pans out. But, of course, Sheikh Nasrallah didn't lose an opportunity to issue a threat to Israel as he so much likes to do.
Anthony, I mentioned wanting to come to Israel, and I don't know whether this would deliver an opportunity for me to come teach English, but there's an acute shortage of teachers ahead of the new academic year, which starts in September. Apart from me volunteering to come teach English, what is actually, on a serious note, being done to address the shortage of teachers?
Yeah, this is a very, very significant issue. Officially, according to the Ministry of Education, Israel is short of 6,000 teachers across the country. The number is more likely to be closer to 10,000 people when you begin to consider the fact that so many of these jobs are not necessarily being publicly advertised by the principals, or that teachers are filling the role but for some reason are unable to physically be there to teach. So the job is taken but really not being fulfilled, or the fact that untrained and unqualified people are being hired to fill teacher roles because there is such an acute shortage of staff. Now, some of this is down to financial terms. This is one of the issues that's been on the table for already the longest time, how much teachers are being paid, and there have been strikes. There were strikes already towards the end of the last academic year over the issue of how much teachers are being paid. There was a proposal put forward by the Ministry of Education to increase the starting salary for a new teacher to 9,000 shekels a month, which is really hardly a living wage, but that already represents a 30% increase over what they have been paid up until now. The problem is that First of all, the union is demanding 10,000 shekels a month and not 9,000 shekels a month. But also, along with the proposal to pay 9,000 shekels a month, which, as I've said before, is quite a significant increase over what they've already been earning, the Ministry of Education decided also to propose a package of terms that are slightly different from the ones that new teachers generally get at the moment. So those new terms include working extra hours and doing things which teachers currently are not accustomed to doing. So, of course, the union has become very, very angry over the proposal, even though the number, the actual headline salary figure, has been increased substantially and is much closer to the number that the union is demanding. But along with it, because the package has been so substantially altered, the teachers' union rejected the offer that was made by the Ministry of Finance, which was an intention to try somehow to at least bring an end to the strike. Of course, it doesn't, unfortunately, help to fill the number of roles, the number of outstanding places that are in evidence across the Israeli teaching system. And unfortunately, we are running headlong into a major, major problem in terms of the education system in our country. Because if we're starting out, and by the way, the fact that we're starting this academic year with such a shortage of teachers doesn't reflect upon the fact that we've had an amazing shortage of teachers over a number of years. This just hasn't just happened all of a sudden. Up until now, Israel has been suffering with a major shortage of teachers, but it's really just coming into the headlines now and being exposed on a much more public basis. So the Israeli academic system, the educational system, unfortunately, under major, major stress right now and a lot of pressure. And it's hard to see how this issue is going to be resolved anytime soon.
Yeah, it is a tough one, that, and education, of course, being so important to Israel, they need to find a fix for this. Moving on, the Israeli High Court has upheld a law that allows the revocation of Israeli citizenship from terrorists. What did the court decide?
Yes, so this is a highly controversial law that has actually been on the statute books already for some time, that allows the revocation of citizenship from people who carry out terror activities. In fact, there's been a law in the citizenship law in Israel since 1952, even though it has been amended a number of times. Originally, the law said that the Minister of Interior was allowed to decide himself about revoking the citizenship of somebody who conducts terror activities in Israel. Subsequently, the law was changed to allow the Minister of the Interior to submit a request to a court, and the court currently has to decide upon the revocation of Israeli citizenship, either if it was acquired using false information or if they've committed an act that constitutes a so-called breach of allegiance to the State of Israel, which is another way of saying an act of terror. Now, this law has been challenged in the High Court as a result of the fact that it was exercised in 2002 against two Israeli Arabs who were involved in acts of terror, each one of whom was involved in some very, very serious incident, one of whom ran over and stabbed two soldiers and two civilians, and the second individual planted a bomb on a bus in Tel Aviv in 2012, which wounded 24 people. He was convicted of charges of intent and aiding the enemy, and as a subsequent consequence of that conviction, the Minister of the Interior applied to a court, and there, both of those individuals had their citizenship revoked. Now, this matter was challenged in the court, and the Israeli High Court of Justice has ruled on this matter, and it ruled, it made two interesting decisions regarding this particular application. The first decision that was made, including the president of the High Court of Justice, Esther Chayot, who was involved in this particular case, was one of the judges on the bench. The court ruled that it is constitutional, that it is allowed to have such a law on the statute books, and the court ruled that this is legal. Let's just also clarifying the fact that the law states that in the event that the person who's having their citizenship revoked actually remains stateless, then the country is required to give that individual permanent residence permit in Israel. So it's even though they might be without a citizenship, they still have the ability to live in Israel via a residence permit. But the court decided that that law is legal. In a separate decision, the court decided that in regard to these two particular individuals, the revocation of their citizenship was not legal. And the reason was purely technical, certain technical aspects that hadn't had been adhered to, as a result of which the court overturned that decision. But it did allow the state to reapply, if they wished to, in order to revoke the citizenship of those two individuals who conducted these terror activities.
Some technical arguments there, but fascinating. So cutting to the chase there, it's still allowed. You commit terror, you're an Israeli citizen, your citizenship can and most probably will be revoked.
It certainly can be revoked. It's only been used on these two individuals and on one other previous incident. So this is not something that is generally used day in and day out. It's very rare.
It's an important tool. Anthony, we need to catch up tomorrow. We also need to chat about LL and their new direct route, which I'm sure is going to interest a lot of people. Thank you so much. It was Anthony Reich with the Israel Report.